Let me run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract's fine print, or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man, and being a country megastar while also having 7 kids, you know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
KFI AM 640, you're listening to the John Cobell Podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
Can you feel the excitement? By the way, we're on KFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. And you can just feel the excitement across America, can't you, Deborah Mark? Mm. The Super Tuesday pregame show. Oh, man.
Very exciting.
Butter up the Orville Redenbacher, because at the end of tomorrow, we could end up with almost Trump versus almost Biden.
Woo! Very exciting, Doug. Very. Can't tell you.
Actually, there's tons to talk about that matters greatly here locally, because we've got the Senate seat, obviously, with Steve Garvey versus Katie Porter and Adam Schiff and Barbara Lee. But we also have a couple of really important ballot measures, Prop 1, HLA, and the DA's race. So we'll get into all of that throughout the course of the afternoon, plus other stuff. But this morning, the United States Supreme Court made a fairly significant decision, to say the least, ruling that Donald Trump will in fact be on the ballot in Colorado and presumably in Maine and Illinois as well. To give us the very latest on this decision and the former president's reaction, ABC News national correspondent Steve Portnoy. Steve, how are you?
Hey, Doug. Good to talk to you.
Thank you for being with us. So okay. This doesn't come as a great surprise to me.
Okay.
No,
me neither.
I mean,
I'll tell you why. Because I listened to the oral argument last month, and I heard the justices across the ideological spectrum say that they were skeptical of the idea that state officials or judges should be able to make their own decisions. And it was liberals like Elena Kagan and Ketanji Brown Jackson who raised the concern the same way that conservatives did. So to have it be a unanimous holding, 9-0, in this unsigned opinion that states should not have the power to decide either by officials or judges that candidates for federal office or federal office holders aren't qualified, it's not a surprise. Inside the concurring opinions, you do read into a difference between the judges here. And it seems to be the four women of the court, the three liberals, Sotomayor, Kagan, and Jackson, along with conservative Amy Coney Barrett, wrote separately to explain how they differed from what they depict as a 5-member majority of the court, five conservatives on the court who went further than these four justices would have gone. The conservatives said that Congress has to pass a law to enforce the third section of the 14th Amendment, setting up a framework. It's interesting. I've dug into the history of all this. Back in the 1860s, after the Civil War and after the enactment of the 14th Amendment, there was a law on the books that provided a framework for how someone could be disqualified from serving in government. It involved federal prosecutors in each of the states going into federal court to get a writ of what was called quo warranto, a warrant, which essentially had a federal judge signing off. And there was a process. Anyway, that process was repealed by the Congress years after the Civil War because it was thought it was no longer needed. Fast forward to 2024, and here we have a question for the first time ever, whether a presidential candidate can be disqualified under the 14th Amendment and by a state judge or a state official at that. The Supreme Court unanimously says no, but there is a difference of opinion, it seems, between the justices on exactly what the proper course is. And the majority holds that the right thing to do next is for Congress, in its divided state, to pass a law that would be signed by the president or otherwise enacted to see to it that future insurrectionists can be prevented from serving in government.
We're talking with Stephen Portnoy, ABC News national correspondent. I'm hardly an attorney. I'm actually usually a defendant, Stephen. So my legal skills are minimal. But what always bothered me about this decision was that Donald Trump has not been adjudicated as guilty of insurrection. So Colorado on its own at a lower judicial level had determined that he was guilty, but there had never been a trial with a jury and a final adjudication on this. That's what the whole Jack Smith thing and the immunity case is all about. That's coming up, and there'll be rulings on that at the end of April, or at least hearings on that at the end of April. But the idea that Maine and Illinois now and Colorado could issue an electoral death sentence, essentially, by kicking the leading candidate for the party and a former president of the United States off the ballot without an actual judge and jury weighing in on that, I think it would be setting up chaos as we go forward because, you know, you put one of ours in a hospital, we'll put one of yours in a cemetery, and the next time along it could be the other party that's filing charges and kicking people off the ballots, and we'd have total chaos.
Yeah, the word chaos, chaotic, patchwork, those are words that are used by the Supreme Court in their opinion today. Essentially, they say it should not be up to state officials to decide this. I will say that Jack Smith's case involving, the January 6th riot here in Washington, D.C., and the allegation that former President Trump was engaged in an effort to defraud the United States and disrupt the proceeding. It's interesting that Jack Smith chose, for whatever reason, he hasn't fully explained it, not to charge the former president with insurrection. There's actually a separate part of the U.S. Code that dates back to the Civil War that speaks to insurrection or rebellion. And it happens that the penalty in the law for engaging in insurrection is the inability, among other things, after you serve a time in jail, it's the inability to serve in government again. It disqualifies you. And that statute was referenced by the Supreme Court in its opinion today. Donald Trump is not charged under that statute. He's charged with other things. Yeah. But you're right that the fact that there isn't any kind of formal process that is uniform. Different states have different rules of evidence. Different states have different procedures. And that was another point that the court made today, that it just shouldn't be up to state courts to decide something so important as who can serve as president of the United States.
And, you know, the irony here is that strictly speaking, and this is actually cuts to what was going on January 6th, the states determine who the president, each state, according to the Constitution doesn't say anything about voting. The Constitution says that the state shall choose the method for selecting the electors, and the electors vote for the president of the United States. Now, by tradition now and the passage of laws on a state-by-state basis, we go to the polls on election day, and whoever wins the state gets the state's electoral college. Some of them have, like Maine, have a split. I think Maine and Nebraska split their electoral vote proportionately. But the irony here is that the Supreme Court has now said that the states should have no role in making the decision of who's on the ballots, except the Constitution says the states are in charge of picking who the president of the United States is. So, the complexities on this start by taking a law that was passed in the aftermath of the Civil War and that the leaders of the country thought had really served its purpose and was no longer necessary, and all of a sudden it sprung to life again in the aftermath of January 6th.
Well, it's interesting. You know, the decision was made by Congress and the states that ratified it in 1868 that in as much as we are a constitutional republic that is a democratic one, where Americans go to the polls, and we have worked since then, certainly, to expand the franchise and allow more people to take part in the process, that at the end of the day, there could be, in this case, if a disqualifier, that if you had been a traitor to your country, if you had previously taken an oath to support or defend, protect the Constitution, and you violated that oath by engaging in war against it or insurrection, rebellion, depending on how you phrase it, well, then that should be a disqualifier, even if the people would rather you serve. And it's hard to square that because, you know, again, we have our democratic principles in this country, and we want to be able to say that we choose our own leaders. And yet this constitutional amendment, which still lives, and the Supreme Court certainly did not say it's a dead letter. The question is, how is it applied? How is it properly applied? And one of the things that we've come to find in 2024 is that some of these old, ancient, you know, esoteric parts of our Constitution can somehow be resurrected if they need to be. And the argument was that in this case, it needed to be. What'll be interesting to see is what happens next in Congress. Jamie Raskin, the Democrat from Maryland, who was a key leader of the January 6th committee, a forceful House Democrat, wants now the Congress to take up this question, with the ball now being put in the Congress's court by the Supreme Court today. Jamie Raskin, however, deals with the fact that, you know, Congress is divided. The Republicans control the House he serves in, and Democrats barely have a majority in the Senate. And while Jamie Raskin in this Congress is probably not going to have much traction with this, what about the next one? And, you know, it'll be really interesting to me because the way Jamie Raskin is talking, he says that the House, in impeaching Donald Trump in January of 2021, already laid it on the line that Donald Trump essentially incited an insurrection. That was what the House voted to say. Now, he was acquitted by the Senate after that, but Raskin says that the House has already deemed Trump an insurrectionist, even though the current House didn't vote on it. The last one did.
Well, the former president declared this a big win for America, and I do believe that it was in terms of minimizing or at least corralling future chaos. Or present chaos. I think that it brings a certain degree of clarity. And the public, the American people have got to make this decision. They have to decide whether they want Donald Trump to be president or not. And to do it through the courts, I think, would be a disaster for this country.
Well, I'll just say one more thing. If the people do decide, that is, if the states and the Electoral College decide, maybe not the population at large, because Trump never won the popular vote, but if he were to win the Electoral College, you have to wonder, if Jamie Raskin really thinks that the House has already propounded that Trump is insurrectionist, might he try to bring a challenge to Trump's election next January 6th? Well, wouldn't that be something?
Well, let's put it this way. We're shooting without a script, so
yeah.
We've seen an awful lot of things that we never thought we would see. Stephen Portnoy, ABC News national correspondent, thanks so much for being with us. Appreciate it. All right, folks, we got a lot of stuff to talk about, including HLA Prop 1, the DA race, the Senate race. It's Super Tuesday pregame show. The national stuff will take care of itself. We got a lot of stuff here in Southern California we've got to deal with.
You're listening to John Cobalt on demand from KFI AM 640.
Doug McIntyre in for John Cobalt, and I'm here till 4, Conway Jr. at that time. And coming up later this hour, I want to talk to you about a tale of two extremists, something to offend everybody, but we'll get into that because it's really important stuff. And that AI nude scandal at that middle school in Beverly Hills, boy, this is such a perplexing question, not just an issue that pertains directly to the emotional well-being of these kids, but really of our ability in the future to determine what's real and what's not real. So we've got lots to get into as we continue to plow through Super Tuesday stuff, the pregame show for tomorrow's big election. Don't go into Hollywood Boulevard, anywhere near there. It's already closed. You know, the Oscars coming up this weekend and daylight savings time, too, I'd like to point out on the bright side, literally the bright side. But they got Hollywood Boulevard closed off with all the usual Azari that goes along with that. And I don't have a problem with this. You know, people get upset. You close the streets, and we'll be talking a lot about streets because of Measure HLA. But, you know, this is good for business here in the city. This is what we're known for, right? So it's a minor inconvenience. It's not like that Hollywood Christmas parade that for inexplicable reasons they have on the Sunday after Thanksgiving every year, which means everybody who's gone to pick up Cousin Sheila at the airport after coming back from, Ohio, you get stuck in a traffic jam that you didn't know was taking place because no one remembers that the Hollywood Christmas parade is taking place on the Sunday after Thanksgiving. Anyway, I digress, as I often do. So we got the big Super Tuesday stuff, and by the end of tomorrow night, it's pretty much Trump, pretty much Biden. We know that. And all the people who want Biden to step aside are still throwing out Hail Mary passes, talking about how, you know, Harry Truman and Lyndon Johnson stepped aside in March, so it's not too late. It's pretty much too late. But it's going to be a repeat of the 2020 election that very few people are excited about, but it looks like that's where we're headed. So let's kind of skip over the national stuff for now and just deal with the local stuff. At the top of the ticket, you got a United States Senate seat up for grabs, a seat once held by Dianne Feinstein. It's hard to imagine that a state that overwhelmingly voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016 and Joe Biden in 2020 is going to flip the Senate to the Republicans by voting for number six from your Los Angeles Dodgers, Steve Garvey. All right. And I'm waiting for Adam Schiff or one of those people, Katie Porter, somebody to come out with an ad that says, Steve Garvey can't even win election to the Hall of Fame. What makes him think he's going to be elected to the United? I mean, they might as well. Right. But here's the deal. You know, it's not a secret that Adam Schiff's strategy was to trash Katie Porter and elevate Steve Garvey, because he could do the math too. He knows that the Democrats, no party preference is the number two party in the state of California. So it's Democrats, no party preference, and then the Republicans. So he's got a huge advantage if he can run against Steve Garvey. Now, with that said, I think it would be incredibly helpful in California politics to have Steve Garvey as the other candidate to vote for in November, if for no other reason that we might actually hear a different point of view. Because here's the deal. You may prefer Katie Porter or Barbara Lee or Adam Schiff, but the bottom line is that the way the politics has devolved, there's very little independent thinking. I mean, ironically, Barbara Lee's probably the most independent thinker of the crowd of them. But pretty much whoever the Democrats, whether it's Katie Porter or Adam Schiff, if they win, the arc of history is not going to change. You can predictably guess which way they will vote on pretty much everything. And by the way, that's probably true for Steve Garvey, too, from the conservative side, which is one of the reasons why we have so much disinterest in politics, because it's like a perpetual, there's no guessing involved. It's like they're ciphers. They're just told which way by the leadership of their party, which way to vote. And then they just vote that way. But at least during the campaign, if you have an exchange of ideas, I don't know if Mr. Garvey is really capable of getting in the mosh pit. He hasn't really risen as a star in the debates thus far, but who knows? If it turns out to be, let's say, Adam Schiff versus Steve Garvey, we actually have a chance to have an election in California where there's two different perspectives as opposed to different shades of the same perspective. We've had one-party rule in this state for a very long time. The way, for instance, in places like Mississippi and Alabama, good luck being a liberal Democrat running in those states, right? You're going to get different shades of red in those states. And here we just have different shades of blue. So at least during the campaign, you could push an Adam Schiff or a Katie Porter, whoever, to explain why their policies are the right policies for the state of California. So we'll see what happens on that. Now, the DA's race, there's like 300 people running for this, right? My simple rule is, as long as that name is not Gascon, we're okay. But the problem, and we're going to talk with Steve Cooley, by the way, in the third hour, in the 3 o'clock hour, we're going to have former LA District Attorney Steve Cooley is going to join us. And he's a Nathan Hochman guy, but he'll make his case for Nathan Hochman. But we'll talk about what the consequences are of having so many candidates and trying to divine how we get through the Gascon era. I think that this is the most important election on the ballot, by the way. The others are just expensive. You know, Prop 1, expensive. HLA, nitwit. Confusing mush of roads. I live out in the West Valley. There's a stretch of Ventura Boulevard that I actually don't know how to drive on it anymore, with backwards parking, and they've put berms.
Is the deal with that?
I don't know.
By that on Friday night.
I don't know where to stop at the traffic light. It says wait here. I don't know if it means me or a bicycle. And then they've got berms down the middle of the road to stop you from making a U-turn. They might as well start putting sand traps on Ventura Boulevard. Just make it a golf course. All right, we got tons to talk about, including the rise of extremism in both parties. This is really important stuff, so we'll get into that when we come back.
Let me run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract's fine print, or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year. Equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Okay. I love Walker Hayes. He's amazing. He's so fun, such a great entertainer. And that's why I'm so excited that JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited time men's collection for the everyday guy. The Walker Hayes for JCPenney collection is an upbeat playlist of instant classics with laid back appeal and down home vibes. As a dad of 7 kids, he knows exactly what fathers want and need when it comes to their style. This collection reflects his casually cool styles with outdoor-inspired details and versatile colors. Perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to think, I'm covered, no worries. Not so fast. Remember, your out-of-pocket costs are not covered by insurance. That can be a lot of money for your family. But how do you know you're not being overbilled? It's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. Unless you're a billing expert, how do you know your medical bills are accurate? HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance. When your medical claims come in, HealthLock technology reviews the claims for errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. HealthLock makes it easy to find and fix hidden errors so you pay only what you owe. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. Bottom line, insurance alone isn't enough. To save, visit HealthLock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider.
You're listening to John Cobalt on demand from KFI AM 640.
Doug McIntyre in for John Cobalt. We're here till 4 o'clock. And, you know, I write this column every week for the LA Daily News, the Orange County Register. It's in the Pasadena Star, all the Southern California News Group papers. But for those of you too cheap, excuse me, thrifty, who don't penetrate the paywall, I want to talk about the column that I wrote this past weekend because I really think that this is a story that we need to hear. You know, I'm at the age where I go to the doctors now and I don't hear what I want to hear. It's true. It used to be when I was 20, you might say, maybe you want to cut back on the booze. You know, maybe try eating a vegetable sometime in this lifetime, which I haven't done. But now I'm paying the price for all of that behavior. So when I go, he tells me things that I don't want to hear. But I have really no choice because not hearing them is not going to make any of these problems go away. And it's the same in politics because a lot of times, you know, we're so worked up and so invested in hating what who the other people are. And I don't care who you think the other people are, but we're so invested in hating them that we just don't want to hear anything from them that that could be considered noteworthy, something that we might have to consider. But there were two stories last week that warn on something that we just have to take seriously. You know, if you ask most people when World War II started, most Americans will say December 7, 1941, with the attack on Pearl Harbor. And by the way, even that's a coin toss now, whether anybody actually under 60 knows actually what Pearl Harbor Day means. But that's when most Americans think World War II started. Most Europeans would say September 1st, 1939, when Germany invaded Poland, which dragged France and England into the war. Because remember, they were at war. Now, in China, in Korea, they could argue that World War II started 1931 when Japan invaded Asia, when Japan went into China. Excuse me. So there's different start dates. But you could also look at the first battles of World War II were fought in the 1920s. In Berlin itself, in Germany, all across Germany, between 1924 and 1929, there were 100 or more, maybe 200 people were killed in street fighting between communists and the beginning of the Nazis. The steel helmets became the Nazis and the Reichsbanner were the communists. And they were fighting left and right and they were killing each other at a pretty regular basis. It was really, really violent. Thousands of people badly injured. And the center could not hold these two extremes together. There were other issues, rapid inflation, the Great Depression, et cetera, but it pulled Germany into giant polar opposites with one outrage topped by a greater outrage until 1933 when the ultimate outrage settled the matter when Hitler took over as the ultimate power. 15 years earlier, the same thing had happened in Russia. When the Russian Revolution was co-opted by Lenin and then Stalin, and literally millions and millions of people died. Now, that's not what's happening here right now, but I think we whistle past that story at our own peril. Because last week at UC Berkeley, a Jewish student group had invited a member of a think tank, a Jewish think tank. His name is Ron Bar Yosef. And he was supposed to speak up on the campus, and a group of pro-Palestinian students organized a protest against this. And it was so concerning that they actually moved the event from one location to another location, and the crowd discovered where the event was going to be and stormed the theater, breaking the doors down, breaking a window. And, you know, in a heightened era of anti-Semitism, anytime glass breaks, it triggers the image, if not the reality, of Kristallnacht. And if you don't know what that is, please Google it, because that's an important piece of history. And the event got shut down. And this got reported, although not widely, because, frankly, speakers have been shouted down and shut down on college campuses for a long, long time and not even related to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Which is tragic in its own right. But where this jumps the shark in terms of ugliness is that many, many, many witnesses to this event report that not only was one woman injured, one Jewish student was injured when someone tried to choke her and she had bruises on her throat, but the crowd was chanting Jew, 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 and dirty Jew at the people attending the speech, who had gone there to attend the speech. Now, what's significant here is that it's very hard to find anybody reporting on that. Oddly, a Berkeley area National Public Radio and public television station reports it, but the campus newspapers don't. And the Los Angeles Times didn't. And we need to pay attention to that stuff. Because when you have crowds of people, look, it's one thing to have a position on the war in Gaza. It's another thing to be shouting down your fellow students and shouting dirty Jew at them while you try to strangle them and busting down doors and windows. That is a form of extremism that, left unchecked, will only produce more and more extremism. Now, the other incident, the other canary in the coal mine, the annual CPAC convention. The annual CPAC convention was in Maryland. And on the opening day of the CPAC convention, this is a conservative political action conference. And it's usually, the show ponies come out, all the candidates want to come out. It's kind of fallen onto hard times of in the last year or so, because the guy who runs the organization has got sex scandals going on around him. And there's a lot of QAnon people involved, and a lot of the candidates didn't want to associate it. Donald Trump spoke at it. But on opening night, the keynote speaker, the guy who kicked it off, is this QAnoner named Jack Posobiec. And he was one of the guys behind the Pizzagate conspiracy. And he started by saying, "Welcome to the end of democracy. We're here to overthrow it completely. We didn't get there all the way on January 6th, but we will endeavor to get rid of it and replace it with this right here." And he raised his clenched fist, to which Steve Bannon, one of the former president's top political advisors, said, "Amen." And the crowd cheered. Now, let's stop for a second, okay? We've got an organization that has been a major influence on American politics for 20 years that the presumptive nominee for the Republican Party spoke at 2 days after this guy appeared, okay, to the same cheering crowd. And by the way, known neo-Nazis who were actually at the Charlottesville rally were in the crowd. They've been identified by NBC News and others. They're calling for the end of democracy and cheering it, and cheering it. Meanwhile, at Berkeley, they're chasing the Jews. And the Democrats don't know what to do with their extremists. And frankly, the Republican Party right now seems to be beholden to these people. And this is where I'm gravely concerned. Because, you know, just like in Germany, the center couldn't hold. And if the center can't stand up to extremism, then the extremists will ultimately win. And frankly, neither one of these are very attractive alternatives to each other. You've got a communist, anti-Semitic mob chasing students through college campuses and shutting down speakers. And then you've got conspiracy theorists calling for the end of democracy, and they're representing the conservative party. I mean, this is serious stuff. Now, you know, the dirty secret of our two-party system, and I'll stop on this point, but it's something to consider. You know, in Europe, in Italy, there's like 160 registered political parties. I think in India, there's like 600 political parties. So nobody ever gets a majority. What you do is you build these coalition governments where you got communists and industrialists in the same. You remember that granddaughter of Mussolini was in the Italian parliament. She was a porn star, and the granddaughter of Mussolini, she's in the parliament. You create these crazy coalitions just so you can have enough people to vote your way, right? And they really have nothing to do with each other. Well, in a two-party system, both the Democrats and the Republicans have always played footsie with the lunatic fringe in their groups. They always have, because they need them. They don't have enough voters that they can win the election without them. The problem is they're really off the leash now. And the Democrats don't know what to do with the pro-Palestinian people that are, in some cases, openly supporting Hamas. Openly supporting, not all of them, but some of them. They don't know what to do with them, because they don't want to just tell them to take a powder. But meanwhile, just yesterday, Donald Trump at a rally said, "I don't want the Mitt Romney Republicans in the party anymore." So he's literally telling moderates, get out of the party. Well, then what is the party? I mean, I don't know about you, but my car's got a gas pedal and a brake. And you know, if you don't have a gas pedal, the car's going to sit there. And if you don't have a brake, it's going to fly into the ocean the first time you come to a sharp turn in the road. So you need to use these two, left and right, play off of each other, to hold it in the road, because you do not want to live in a country where there's no healthy middle, both economically and politically. You end up with a real ugly scene. The pages of history are soaked in blood from countries that went to extremism, left or right.
You're listening to John Cobalt on demand from KFI AM 640.
Doug McIntyre with you in for John Cobalt until 4 when Tim Conway Jr. comes along. In the 3 o'clock hour, former L.A. County District Attorney Steve Cooley will be here to talk about tomorrow's critically important DA race, amongst all the other stuff we'll get into. The ballot measures, Prop 1, HLA. Of course, the big story today, the U.S. Supreme Court ruling Donald Trump will stay on the ballot, not just in Colorado, but that means pretty much everywhere that the states can't kick him off, which seems to me to be the right decision based on the law. So we'll get into that as well. This story is really disturbing because I don't know what the answer to this is. You've probably heard about this. Beverly Vista Middle School in Beverly Hills, when some students apparently were sharing nude photos and nude in quotes of a classmate, but it was AI generated. In other words, they took the kid's face and put it on someone else's body and shared it with classmates. Cops are involved. And to me, the law is a little fuzzy apparently on this. It's not clear if any state law would apply, but clearly there's a victim here. Where this threat of crimes committed via AI going forward, and it's been this way for a while now, really strikes when it gets to pedophilia. Because child pornographers have created AI or basically artistic renderings, and I'm using artistic in the descriptive, not as a positive modifier, but people can create essentially digital images that aren't of any specific child. They're amalgams of many, many, many children, just an artistic interpretation, but have them doing all kinds of perverse things so that there's no actual child there's no identifiable child who's being harmed. Whereas the story out of Beverly Hills, there's clearly victims here. And apparently this took off when somebody did this with a Taylor Swift picture. They posted Taylor Swift's face. They merged it onto a nude, some kind of pornographic image of some other woman. And all of a sudden, all the kids discovered, oh, look what we can do. Look what we can do on our phones. We can use AI to make nude pictures of Shirley over there in the homeroom. And, of course, the consequences are devastating, the shaming and blah, 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 blah. And it's going to get harder and harder and harder to tell what's fake, not just here, but across the board, across everything. I mean, when I used to watch television, I don't really watch television anymore. Like everybody else, I just watch reels all night. I just sit there and click and watch, not TikTok, but certainly Instagram reels and Facebook reels. And I watch cats and I watch boats sink. And I watch, I love watching remote controlled airplanes crash. I love watching people's hobbies crash and burn. They spent thousands of dollars on these things. They're 52 years old flying around a remote controlled airplane at Woodley Park. Boom! There goes your hobby. Okay? So I watch this stuff. But now, you start to get these other videos that are sent to you, and I'm starting to pick up on these incredible explosions and cars flying and stuff. I said, wait a second. If that had actually happened, that would be on the news, right? But it turns out, of course, it's not, because it's somebody made it up. But it's getting harder and harder and harder to tell the difference. And this is certainly true with these videos that are going around and just ruin kids' lives. It's a real serious problem. And then, here's a story. This is a companion story. I wanted to get this in. This is in the New York Times a couple days back. Story of this woman named Elisa who has a daughter, and her daughter wants to be a model. She's 11, by the way. She's 11 years old. And the mother curates the Instagram account to make sure everything's on the up and up. But look at what she's doing. Some parents are the driving force behind the sale of photos, exclusive chat sessions, and even the girls' worn leotards and cheerleader outfits to their followers. What?
That's how creepy.
How is Child Protective Services not coming in with a battering ram like they're going into Elian Gonzalez's house to grab this woman and throw her in jail? She's selling worn leotards to people who are following her 11-year-old daughter online? What's wrong with people? Well, you'll find out. We got 2 more hours to tell you. McIntyre in for John Cobell. By the way, I have this book. It's called Frank's Shadow. And those of you who had the over-under that I'd get it in the second hour. No, first hour. You can get it in good bookstores and some crummy ones as well. Or you can get it online at Amazon.com or my own website, DougMcIntyre.com. All right. Deborah Marsh got the latest headlines. We got 2 more hours. We're here till Conway. This is KFI.
Hey, you've been listening to the John Cobell Show podcast. You can always hear the show live on KFI AM 640 from 1 to 4 p.m. every Monday through Friday. And, of course, anytime on demand on the iHeartRadio app.
Let me just run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract's fine print? Or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.